All right, how are we doing today?
Good, how are you?
All shoveled out. There they go. Yep. Well, kind of been a long week, but, you know, it's always, Colts are always all our team to prepare for, so glad we had the extra time. Kind of wrap things up today and head out there and, you know, be ready to go Sunday night.
You said in the past that you kind of use the bye to look at yourselves. But when you play a team that's coming off of a bye, do you have to be ready or different things that they may not have shown earlier in the year?
Yeah, sure. And they do that anyway. You know, we see that from week to week. I mean, even when they don't have an extra week, they change up their looks a little bit from game to game. So, yeah, we have to be ready for that. And with the extra time, I'm sure that they'll have a couple things that we're not working on this week that we're not prepared for. So we'll have to, you know, deal with those as they come. But that's part of playing the Colts. And they'll definitely be in play this week, no question.
Bill, is there a Russ factor coming back from the bye week? Or is it just
I don't know. We practiced once last week. We've been out here for, you know, 4 days this week. So doing the best we can to get ready. Hopefully we'll be ready to go.
You mentioned that you kind of have to be ready for anything. That's the Colts. When it comes to Pep Hamilton's offense, I guess, what are kind of the, I don't know, are there any defining characteristics? It's been, 3 years with him going in deep, but.
First of all, they use all the personnel groups. So they use a lot of three tight ends, one receiver, two receivers, three receivers. Last week against the Giants, they used some four receivers. So you have to be ready for, you know, the whole gamut of, like I said, three tight ends, which sometimes that plays like two backs and two tight ends. Sometimes it plays like, you know, they can spread out, they can keep them in tight, and then they have all the personnel groups in between, up to the four receivers last week, you know, where they started with Moncrief, Nix, Wayne, and Hilton. So, you know, plus their backs are good receivers. So it's really, you know, you got all those personnel groups. You got a lot of different formations and then their plays. So they have a good amount of volume, a lot of things you have to prepare for. You're not just preparing for a team that just lines up in one personnel group and does a lot of things out of that. It gets you all the way across the board with the different people, the different formations, and, you know, plays that complement each other, that, you know, they show you one thing and you're thinking about that, and then they have a complementary play that goes with it out of those same groups and same looks, and they just shuffle them around the next week and the next week. And so, you know, after 4 or 5 games, you got a lot of, you know, you got a big volume of stuff that they've shown. So that's, you know, you don't get all that in one game, but over 5, 6, 7 weeks, however long far you go back, then it just, you know, keeps expanding.
Has it evolved as luck has developed? Have you noticed?
Maybe it has. I don't know. That's a question you probably should ask them. But I'd say, like by having Allen, you know, as part of it this year, and Moncrief, you know, that's probably given them the ability to extend to more receivers, more tight ends. You know, Richardson and Bradshaw give them, you know, two good backs. So, you know, they've had the opportunity to, you know, expand it in both directions, to get bigger, to get faster, with depth in their backfield. So they've used all those.
Bill, we've heard a lot this week about Chuck and Greg blitzing and how much they blitz, and maybe it's more than average in the NFL. Kind of two parts. Do they disguise it a lot? And when you're breaking down film, does your definition of a blitz maybe differ from other teams or the Football Outsiders' definition of a blitz?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what Football Outsiders does. But, you know, again, normally you're talking about a 4-man rush, you know, a 5-man rush is an extra guy. So I would say that's a form of pressure. And then 6-man is, you know, or sometimes 5 could be 2 linebackers and dropping a defensive lineman out. So it's still 5, but it's really, you know, 2 potential blitzers that aren't linemen. So, you know, they do that, then they bring 6 sometimes. Sometimes they bring seven, and you know, peel guys. If you release, they cover them. If you don't release, then they blitz. So, you know, they have a lot of different combinations. I mean, I'd say the thing about the Colts is you see a lot of guys blitzing. You see the linebackers blitzing. You see the secondary players blitzing, the safeties or the nickel backs. So they you know, move it around with those guys. They have, you know, you can't just say it's just going to be this guy, because it's not. It can be sometimes one guy, sometimes it's two guys, sometimes it's two guys with a defensive lineman dropping out. So those are all the different forms of it. And I would say, yeah, they do a fair amount of it. You know, I don't know about any other measurement, but just in getting ready for them, yeah, they do a fair amount of it. Got to be ready for it, and you got to be ready for a lot of different guys to come. It's not all the same guy.
Andrew Luck has had seven interceptions in two games against you. What do you think you've done to put him in positions where he makes mistakes?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think you just, obviously, when you're ahead and they're thrown at the end of the game like they were last year, that's, you know, we've all been in that situation before. I think that's sure not where they want to be, or where we want to be, or where any team wants to be. So if we can put them in that situation again, that'd be good for us.
Bill, what strikes you about the way Chuck Pagano has led the Colts since he's been there?
I mean, they've been consistent. You know, they've won a lot of games. You know, they've done a good job in all three phases of the game. Made a lot of plays in the kicking game. They made plays on offense and made plays on defense. So, you know, they're a well-rounded, well-balanced team. They have a lot of different, they're an explosive team, you know, in terms of turning the ball over or making plays in the kicking game, or obviously scoring offensively from pretty much anywhere on the field. So you really can't afford to, you know, relax at any time. You know, the surprise onside kicks, the fakes, the explosive offensive plays, the pressures on defense. I mean, if you just, you know, let your guard down, they can, you know, they can hit you. They can, you know, hit home in a hurry. So got to be alert, got to be ready for 60 minutes of, you know, good football in all three phases of the game.
How has DeQuell Jackson changed your defense?
You know, he's obviously very, you know, experienced guy. Looks like he is involved in a lot of the communication up front. Looks like Adams is involved in a lot of communication in the secondary, and then they work together, you know, on different adjustments and calls and all that, because they do a lot of things. So there is some, say, you know, decent amount of communication involved in getting all that coordinated. But, you know, DeQuell's a very instinctive player. He's around the ball a lot. He's got very good instincts in the passing game. I'd say better than most linebackers in terms of recognizing pattern combinations, having depth. You know, like the play he made against us last year, you know, Cleveland, he's like 20 yards deep when he intercepted that in cut. You don't see that from a lot of, you know, a lot of linebackers. So I mean, all those things are good in terms of coordinating, or, you know, communicating, running the defense, and being instinctive, being around the ball. Just a good player.
T.Y. Hilton, Bill, is he a guy that can be covered just man-to-man, or do you always need to think about cover two, extra protection, or coverage with him?
Yeah, I mean, he's seen covered a lot of different ways. You know, they move around. It's not always in the same place, so you have to be cognizant of that. It's not like you can just call a defense and be sure where he's going to be. And he's, you know, obviously, like a lot of good receivers, he's dealt with double coverage. So just because you have some combination of two guys on him doesn't mean that, you know, that he's not a problem, because he knows there's two guys and he can figure out how to just attack one guy and beat him. So he does a good job of that too.
It seems like Werner has a bigger role on their defense this year as opposed to his rookie year.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, didn't he miss like three or four games last year with an ankle in the middle of the year? So yeah, I'd say overall though, his play time is up, but I think if he would have played the amount of time in those games that he missed, it'd be closer, you know, than what it looks like between this year and last year. But yeah, he's out there a lot. You know, he's out there a lot. Redding's out there a lot. They rotate some of the other guys in the front, but those two guys are out there pretty much most of the time. So, you know, he flip-flops in their base defense, and then, you know, it's usually on our left in passing situations, but not always. They move him around there, too. Sometimes he stands up, and, you know, he's been in some different spots. But normally he's on the offensive left in their sub-defense, but they're an over-and-under team, so he flips with the formation based on the offensive, where the tight end is and all that, so he can be on either side in regular. So a lot of different guys have to be ready for him.
What's made him effective in your eyes? Seems like he's a high motor kind of guy.
Yeah, very high motor. Yep, he is, plays with a lot of effort. You know, he's athletic. He's got good quickness. You know, he plays on his feet a lot. He's a hard guy to – he doesn't stay blocked. You know, sometimes you see guys get into him, but then he keeps working and has enough quickness and athleticism to, you know, eventually come free. And, he makes a lot of effort plays, you know, plays where he's, again, initially not in the play, but eventually, you know, gets into it with his quickness and his effort.
Does this remind you of Nick Mitchell?
I don't know. I think they're a little different.
What would you say are the keys to a really effective two-minute offense? You guys have been really good. Last 2 minutes of the first half this year. What are the most important things you go over with your team, emphasizing that part of the game?
Well, I mean, the 2 minute at the end of the half is a lot different than the 2 minute at the end of the game. I mean, they're two really completely different situations. I mean, I know everybody talks about them like they're the same, but they're, to me, they're not anything the same. You don't have to score at the end of the half. I mean, if you have to score at the end of the game to win the game, then that's a totally different situation. So, therefore, I think I see it differently.
With that in mind, what are the differences besides the obvious, the urgency to score?
That's the obvious, yeah. It's if you got to score to get in position to kick a field goal or score a touchdown to win or tie the game, then that's a totally different situation than at the half when if you don't score at the end of the half, you haven't lost the game. Like, do you want to score? Yeah, sure, you want to score every time you have the ball. That's why you put the offense out there. If you don't want to score, you just send the punt team out there. But we're always trying to score. But it's just different at the end of the half. So try to take what you can get and not put yourself at more risk than you have to. At the end of the game, you got to do whatever you got to do to move the ball and get in position to win the game. So if you have to take chances, if you have to do things you may not want to do in order to have an opportunity to make plays you need to make, then, you know, you're willing to do that. That's dictated by the situation.
Does field position dictate more than anything to the first half, two-minute warning? You know, that fine line about whether or not you want to go down and do everything you can to maybe get a field goal or even score a touchdown as opposed to not giving them a chance at the end of the first half. Because it's not imperative to score, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, I think field position is part of it, but, I mean, so is everything else. Time, timeouts, how you match up in that situation. I mean, I think it's all part of it. I think there's a lot of factors in that, in what you call and then what happens in the sequence of plays that you call. So each one's different. I mean, obviously there's some common threads, but I think each situation, each week is different based on the matchups and based on whatever the specific situation is, time, timeouts, field position, you know, playing conditions, etc.
Bill, the Colts defense overall is about middle of the pack in the league, but on third down, it's the best in the league. What difference do you see on third down where they lock it down that's maybe not there on first and second down?
Yeah, I think that they've obviously done a really good job on third down. They do a lot of different looks. You know, they mix in their coverages, they mix in the pressures, and they've done a good job of, you know, creating some good matchups, and they've gotten pressure and they've covered well. So, I mean, in the end, it's execution.
Does that put some pressure on you guys to avoid third and longs and difficult third down situations?
I mean, believe it or not, we always try to avoid third and long. think that's, we never go into the game saying, oh, let's see how many third and longs we can get into and see how many of those we can convert. Like, we never try to do that. So that's an emphasis point every week, just like turnovers. We always want to protect the ball. We always want to stay out of long yardage. That's basic offensive football. Don't give them the ball and move forward.
To Terrell a little bit yesterday. We talked about the competitiveness in practice since he's been here. I think being around Tom and some of the other guys on the team, he's noticed that it's at a pretty high level. I'm just wondering how you would characterize the competitiveness in practice on a daily basis for you guys.
That's an interesting comment. Because the only team I've ever seen practice is us. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how other teams – we've worked against, you know, Philadelphia and, you know, Washington or – you know, I mean, that's preseason. But, like, on a daily basis, I really couldn't tell you how any other team in the league practices. It would all come from something like that, you know, another player or possibly coach. You know, we have a couple of coaches on our staff that have been with different organizations in recent years. You know, might comment on how, you know, another team practices or does a certain thing in a drill or whatever it is relative to the way we do it. But that's really kind of, I think, the perspective that you need, because I would have no idea how any other team practices, you know. So for a player or a coach who's actually been in those to say, well, it's like this here and it's like this there, then that's, you know, a valid comment from them. I really couldn't make that because I haven't seen it.
How about this year's group versus, I don't know, years past, teams that you've coached years past? Is the competitiveness level any different?
I think basically we've tried to keep it, you know, about the same. Again, we have different levels of competitiveness in practice. There's some drills that are as competitive as we can make them. There are other drills that are, you know, competitive to a point. Obviously, we don't want a, you know, defensive back blowing up a receiver to break up a pass and, you know, things like that. And then there are other drills that aren't that competitive. It's, you know, we're trying to provide a look and we're trying to not make it a physical type of competition, but, you know, more of a repetition execution type of drill. So, you know, based on those various stages, we try to, you know, I think the most important thing is that everybody is practicing at the same tempo. You know, one guy playing one level, another guy playing at another level. If we're all playing at the same level, whatever that is, then I think those are your most productive practices. But, you know, we have drills like one-on-one pass rush or one-on-one coverage or, you know, drills like that. It's competitive as you can make it. You know, it's, you're out there trying to beat the other guy. He's trying to beat you. Then there's other drills that are tempoed a little bit below that. It's competitive to a certain point. Then there's other drills, like I said, that are really not intended to be competitive. They're intended more to be teaching and identification and recognition and execution rather than the competition part of it. So based on what we're doing, what the drill is, what day of the week it is, what point in the season it is, or what point in training camp, you know, I mean, it could be any combination of those.
Well, would you say players and coaches, for that matter, have found ways to replace that physical element in practice? I mean, you've said many times that practice nowadays is much different than it was 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. Do you think different players and coaches have found different ways to replace that competitive fire in practice? Mentally over physically.
Yeah, I mean, practice is just preparation. I mean, it's a necessary part of getting ready for the game. It's part of preparation. It's not punishment. It's not, you know, it's preparation. So that's whatever you can do to get your team prepared, whatever a player can do to prepare to play. You know, now full speed contact on every single play, every day of the week is, you know, at some point it's diminishing returns. It's counterproductive. So I don't think anybody is in favor of that, but it's preparation. So you do the best you can as a coach to prepare your team. You do the best you can as a player to prepare yourself or prepare your teammates if you're working, you know, with them and you're giving them a look at what they're doing. You're the scout team. Then, you know, then that's you're helping them prepare just like they help you prepare. So, like that's the way I see all of that. It's not about a. It's about preparation. That's what practice is.
Not to harp on it, but with Rivas coming in this year, do you feel like, and Tom throwing against him, like he's talked about going against Darrell and what kind of challenge that is for him in practice, do you think that helps elevate their play at all on both sides?
I think the times when it is truly a competitive situation, yeah, I think it's great. And we saw that last year and a half before that with Talib. You know, the same kind of thing. You know, they're out there and, you know as a quarterback that probably not going to be a lot of big windows to throw on with Rivas. You're going to have to make a really good throw. As a receiver, you're going to have to run a really good route. You're going to probably have to catch the ball, you know, away from your body or in a place that's a little bit more difficult because, you know, you may not be able to gain as much separation from him. Sure that, you know, the defensive backs, Rivas, Browner, you know, Sean McCourty, whoever they are, you know the quarterback's pretty accurate. Being close isn't really good enough. You got to be right on top of the guy. You got to, you know, really be able to defend the route 100%, not 90%. It's just not good enough. Like when Rivas and Gronkowski, you know, were able to work together early in camp. I mean, that was, again, kind of good for both guys to, you know, get that type of, again, the competition kind of graduated up. It didn't, but, you know, still to be able to, you know, run routes on Rivas, defend Gronkowski, just, you know, throw against. I mean, you know, I think those are all good situations, you know. So, yeah, and I do think they get competitive. There's no question. When we say it's competitive, then, you know, it's competitive. Like, they don't want to walk into the locker room and listen to the other guy, you know, like, hey, I, you know, blew you up on those three or four plays, you know. Like, they want to be saying that. So, it's definitely competitive. But I'm just saying, like, not every drill is set up that way. But, yeah, the ones that are, yeah, sometimes there's stuff riding on, you know, the final play, the final whatever, one-on-one play, the final pass rush play, whatever, you know, for the whole group. So whichever guy wins, then there's some extra whatever involved. So, you know, and then that increases the competitive level and not want to let your teammates down and bragging rights, if you will. Yeah, sure. No, I think that's healthy. And that's a part of it. Okay. All right. See you all in Indy.